This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 31st of December, 1954. The title of this lecture is Problems and Games. This tape is 60 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
The material which I have to give you at this time, of course, should be received with reverence. With seriousness, with a realization that life is not play, that it is a grim game. We look over life, we understand very, very completely and conclusively, without any slightest quibble along the line, that here and there, somebody, at least to some slight degree, gets done in. This is very easy to behold. And we restrain ourselves from looking at the grimness of this sort of thing. For instance, when you sit down to a steak dinner, do you realize that some poor, innocent cow had to die so that you could have that dinner? You realize that? And yet you hold that fact away from you. You try not to look at that fact. Do you realize that when you pick up a piece of celery and start eating on it, that it, too, was trying to live? And the injustice of it. It was doing good. It was doing well. It was obedient. It was trying to do exactly what it was supposed to do, and you up and ate it. We don't even know whether or not a piece of celery feels any pain when you chew upon it. This is all very grim and very terrible, but I am afraid that studying in the field of Dianetics and Scientology has shown me a couple of factors involved in this, and I would feel very badly about it if it weren't for these couple of factors. Now, in SOP 5 in Scientology, we had a very interesting system called Gita, give and take process. And that became, by the time we got to SOP 8, Standard Operating Procedure 8, Step 4, expanded Gita. Bears no relationship to the Indian practice Gita or books. It just does the work they're supposed to do. And this process said that you would have the pre-clear waste, accept, desire, various commodities. And in that list is the word pain. And entirely as an experiment today, what a workable process. You could take a pre-clear and have him waste pain for himself, waste pain for somebody else, and have somebody else waste pain for somebody else. In other words, in a bracket, and at the end of this time of processing, an hour or two, this individual will say, there's the strangest thing, but you know pain is terribly valuable. You know, I've actually been covertly sitting here trying to make this body hurt a little bit here and there. And do you know that to see a body writhing in pain is almost sufficient to make the Thetan go down and say, the reason for this is a Thetan can't really hurt unless he says he hurts. And it's much better if something else says he hurts. Then it's easier to believe. So life would be very grim if it weren't for the fact that the life energy production unit is actually thirsty for suffering. It's a good game. It's hard for somebody to realize this unless he's had this process run on him. And in want of having the process run on you, you just have to take my word for it for a moment, that it's not quite as grim as life makes it out to be. The grimness is part of a game, too. I remember when I first tumbled to this fact, I was sitting in a car parked alongside the road. I'd been pulled over to the side of the road by a traffic cop, not to be given a ticket, but to get the highway clear. And I pulled over obediently, and I sat there, not knowing quite what was going on. And all of a sudden, I saw the first funeral car, and then the second funeral car,
and then the third funeral car, and then the fourth funeral car. I looked at all these people, you know, and they were puddling up the upholstery most horribly, you know. And poor old Joe, you know. And the fifth funeral car, and the sixth funeral car, and the seventh funeral car, and the eighth funeral car, and the ninth funeral car, and the tenth funeral car. And boy, that upholstery was taking a beating, you know. Poor old Joe. And I started to feel a little bit bad about it for a moment. I said, gee, you know, that fella had an awful lot of friends. And then all of a sudden, an individual that I had known in a Maryland backwoods town came to mind. This was a man that attended every funeral. He attended every funeral. He had a big car, and he'd go to the funeral, and he'd pick up people, and he'd go along in the funeral procession. He was a deacon in the church. He was also the local bank manager. And this individual had the very interesting habit of weeping copiously for the departed husband and foreclosing swiftly upon the left widow. And this gentleman seemed to me, I just got thinking about this fellow, it seemed to me he had a sort of a thirst for this sort of thing. And it suddenly occurred to me that his foreclosure upon the widow was just an effort to get more weep. That's another opportunity to cry, you know? Flick a little more pain, death, and suffering around about the place. This fellow had an appetite. And the 12th funeral car and the 13th and the 14th and the 15th were going by this time. And then the hearse. And we saw this hearse, you know, it was just jammed full of flowers. It suddenly occurred to me that probably nobody had ever sent this poor guy any flowers while he was alive. But here he is dead, you see, and he's got all these flowers. Seemed to me to be very peculiar. A very short time before this, I had been successfully completing the exteriorization of a preclear from an endless number of deaths. Now, this wasn't exteriorization of the body. I was merely picking him out of engrams, a process which I had been working with way back in middle 51, late 51, picking him out of these engrams, one after the other. And they were all death engrams. And the individual would be worry, worry, writhe, writhe, agony, agony, dead, way up here. Well, what am I worried about that for? Get the idea? At each cycle was that way. And I hadn't really applied this to life yet. And I suddenly recognized that this corpse riding along there had gone about 75 or 80 feet up in the air and taken a look at the clay that was still lying there, you know, and said, why am I interested about that? And here were all these people weeping, you know. And I thought, well, this is a very strange puzzle. I wonder why they are paying so much attention to this fellow when he's dead, when they didn't pay very much attention to him when he was alive. The answer finally occurred to me. He was no good to him alive. Dead, there was a wonderful opportunity of experiencing a lot of pain, which was as high on the tone scale as they could come, pain and sadness. And so we had this wonderful funeral. But it didn't have anything to do with the departed or deceased. Nothing whatsoever. There's a curious thing. So life is involved in playing some of the more interesting games. What Freud called the subconscious or the reconscious. We would develop, by the way, a new subconscious called the re-subconscious. And this is just two cellars below the subconscious, which is below the reconscious. And this interesting stairway of unconsciousnesses was developed in direct controversy to the controversial theory, well-known theory that's used by science. And the reconscious apparently is engaged in being the opponent that you don't know about, while you know all about it. One of the most damaging experiences to somebody's aplomb about his sadness and sorrow and the grimness of life is to run one of the root two steps from the creation of human ability, that book which contains all the root one and all the root two steps and all the axioms. The route two-step is ask the fellow for some problems he could be. And if he runs that very long, he discovers something very horrible. He discovers something excessively terrible. He's making up problems so he can be a problem to himself without knowing that he is being the problem to himself, but so that he can retain an interest in existence and in life. And this is one of the neatest tricks anybody ever did. And you run, give me some problems you could be, some more problems you could be, some more problems you could be, and this datum will inevitably, sooner or later, fall out in the individual's lap. Bang. It's like, my golly, you know what? I'm just making up these problems so I can be these problems to myself and then not know that I'm being the problem to myself. That's what I'm doing. And he will stay in a state of levity or cheerfulness about this fact for many minutes before he suddenly grabs this as a problem and buries it real quick and gets it out of sight. He almost inevitably will do that. All life can do then is pretend that it's serious. All life can do then is to make up problems of such magnitude that even it can be interested in its own problem. And if you come along as an auditor and solve too many of a preclear's problems, you have taken away from him too many games. And having taken away from him too many games, he'll invent a new one. And it will probably be one that has more pain and more suffering in it than the other game you took away. He will now insist that the game is a serious game, all the while knowing that it is just a mockery. All right. That is the woof and warp of existence. But it has a dependency upon games. Did you ever see anybody paying much attention to psychosomatic aches and pains during a moment of high emergency? What we use is high emergency. All we use for high emergency is simply some exterior combination of factors which makes a problem in present time which we can say demands so much attention that we are forced to deal with that problem over a priority of all others. So therefore, you see what we have as necessity level about which we spoke in the first book. Remember necessity level? Well, necessity level is simply this. It is recognition of a bigger problem. And when you give a fellow a problem out here, he pulls his attention, at least temporarily, off of problems in here. He extroverts. The way he extroverts, because he's got a bigger problem. Now, during the bombings of London, during the bombings of Berlin, and of Japanese cities, it was recognized that the incidence of psychosis and neurosis dropped and that the incidence of suicide dropped to zero. It was fantastic. I mean, you'd think these people would feel real bad about having all these eggs laid on their heads, you know. And instead of that, they just 100% extroverted on the emergency of the situation and went around and fought the fires and picked up the wounded and dying and cleaned up the rubble and squared things around. In other words, there was enough of an exterior problem there so that nobody kept his attention on his own terminals. The war is over. There's no further exterior problem of this magnitude. Then we would immediately expect a greater incidence of psychosis, neurosis, suicide, psychosomatic illness than prior to the war. And certainly than during the war when it became zero. Fascinating, hmm? So here we have life set up as a problem or a series of problems, all of which are calculated to obtain the interest of and invite action in life. And all these problems can be categorized as games. We have then games. Let's go way upstairs on such a theory of games and discover that the first thing you need to play a game is an opponent. Let's see, as we bring pre-clears up tone scale, that they very often look around and find all kinds of strange opponents. They will look around their environment and find an opponent. If the person is quite psychotic, the first person he recognizes as an opponent is his auditor. And he should fight this auditor. He's liable to do this anyway. The auditor's liable to make him feel a little bit better. He's liable to go out and tell all the neighbors that this auditor is the most horrible fellow that ever lived. One needs an opponent in order to play a game. Well, that's fine. One needs a lot of other things in order to play a game. But the first thing you need to play a game is an opponent. You couldn't really have a satisfactory game without an opponent. Now, let's look at the communication formula and discover that in the lack of somebody at the receipt point, life quite ably puts somebody at the receipt point. We don't care whether there was just one Thetan, and then he went ahead and invented or created all the other Thetans, or whether or not there were other Thetans who got in communication with each other. We don't care which way this worked out, because it'll all amount to the same thing. But it's a necessity, if you're going to have a communication, to have a receipt point, isn't it? And the funny part of it is nothing short of a live receipt point is satisfactory. If you could always have had a live receipt point on communication, you wouldn't have gotten into very many barriers. But the first thing that you would say about the receipt point that you have mocked up or which appeared there was that it was a different person across a distance. And that distance is the first barrier, even though you're in good communication. Take a look at this on chart 6. We have here cause, distance, effect. Now, when we play this back on the same communication, we have here cause, prime, effect prime. And then to have a full communication here, we would have to have the same thing in reverse, cause, effect, cause prime, effect prime. And this is the same two-loop cycle as before, where we had Bill, Joe, Joe prime, Bill prime. And over here, originating the communication this time, we have Joe receiving it, we have Bill answering it, we have Bill prime, and then receiving or acknowledging, we have Joe prime. That's the same thing, see? This, by cause and effect, is how we graph two-way communication. This would be the first opening gun of a game. You'd have some distance, you'd have some space, and you would have some acknowledgement, and you'd have some answer. Now, in order to even start a game, you've got to have some communication. But after people get a little bit anxious about this game called communication, which, by the way, is quite adequate as a game, quite adequate. People get a little bit anxious about it, as we see here in chart 7. This kind of thing starts happening. We get this first cause, distance, effect. And the individual at effect says, just to make a game, you understand, not for any other reason, says, I mustn't be an effect of that particular cause. And although there recognizably is space in between, this individual barriers it in some way and puts up some sort of a barrier. Well, that's all right. But by duplication here, if he won't, this fellow cause one here, sees that his effect isn't going through, then he becomes completely unwilling to be in effect, too. He says, well, let's make a real game out of this. So here we are at effect prime. We have your cause prime now, just to make this two-way cycle. You know, you understand that this is the curve that we've been drawing all along. He says, I don't want to be in effect either. He puts up a barrier. Space wasn't enough of a barrier. Now you get a more serious game. You get a game with secrets in it, with elements, with mysteries, and more particularly with particles, and you have descended immediately from space into energy. And the second you get into energy with a game, you're in trouble. All that's wrong with any pre-clear is he doing something by energy that he ought to be doing by postulate. You find that he's saying muscle when he ought to be saying see? And by the way, you've seen pre-clears play games like this, one kind or another. They sit there and grit their teeth. They say, I'll get this concept run out here and just forceful. And one of the greatest surprises and reliefs they get is when all of a sudden they find out they don't have to try that hard. They can just do it by a postulate. People handle their bodies by energy lines. They put big communication lines on bodies. It isn't that this is bad. It's simply that it makes barriers. All right. You ever see the strong man in the circus? I remember there was a very, very upset strong man one time. He was a strong man in a sideshow. And he had been pulled on out front, you know, to lift dumbbells and so on. And there was a farmer kid along with me, and he got real curious because, boy, those dumbbells looked heavy. And this kid kept looking at these dumbbells, you know, and the strong man was picking up these dumbbells, you know, and screening every muscle. Wham! And then he'd drop them, bang. Wipe off his hands. And this farm boy, after the strong man went off, and this farm boy pushed one of these dumbbells. Barker was gone, so he climbed up on the side of the platform. He was not very restrained or bashful. He'd been keeping company with me for a while. Anyhow, I was, by the way, at the time barnstorming out through the Middle West with a Waco tin, having a lot of fun. But anyhow, this kid fell to this thing, found out it rolled quite easily, and picked it up and started examining it. And he was reading the balls on the end of it and said 200 pounds on the end of each one of these. He was looking at it and smiling. There was quite a crowd around there, and they thought that was very funny. They laughed. But the essential of the act was for the strong man to demonstrate that there was energy, that there was difficulty, that there was a seriousness to all this weight and gravity. The truth of the matter was, these things were featherweights. All right, the first time that strong man was ever in a circus, he probably found out the crowd was not at all impressed when he picked up this elephant. He walked over and grabbed the elephant by the loose skin and picked him up and set him down again, you know, and walked off. Nobody was impressed. So he went around and he says, well, it's hard to pick up elephants. That's difficult, and I'm a great guy because I can pick up an elephant, see? You see, it's hard to pick up an elephant. And so we got gravity. But here we have this barrier erected between these two fellows, and we get a body in evolution. A body doesn't come about simply on the communication formula alone. The body comes about by somebody putting up a ridge. Now, there could be another reason for this ridge. These individuals could say, well, although I know perfectly well that Joe is over there, I am going to tell Joe that I don't know he's over there, so that then Joe will have to put up an energy mass in order to show me that he is over there, and I will claim that I see the energy mass and can feel it, and that will convince Joe. And after that, he'll have to pack around this energy mass all the time before I'll recognize him. See what kind of a game this could be? And so we get a couple of terminals, which gradually grow arms and legs. And people carry these energy masses around and put clothes on them and so forth, which is not a bad game. But when it comes down to these two bodies having to have bodies in order to converse, that is not true. That is a lie. They don't have to have vocal cords, mouths, teeth, vocabularies, or anything else to converse. But to make a game, they insist they have to have. He even speaks, by the way, of the tongues of angels in the Bible. There is one, I think it's Corinthians 1, chapter 13, line 1. Yeah, paragraph 1. If I speak with the tongues of men or of angels, and if I have no charity, I am as sounding brass and the tinkling of a temple bell. Well, tongues of angels. What would be the tongue of an angel? It would be communicating without vocabulary or masses. That would be that, but that would be the tongue of an angel. Well, further back on the track, if people keep going on a dwindling spiral, we can see that further back on the track, you're liable to have a clearer state of being here or there, a greater state of awareness on the part of some people that they are exteriorized or can do certain things. So, these things aren't necessary. All we need here is just C and E and P prime, E prime. Not even the line is necessary. Not even the line. Not even the space. But the space makes a good game, and it makes the difference between thee and me. But the essential difference between thee and me is simply a space. That's all. Energy masses be damned. Mamie Glutz might conceive that she is better than the other girls at the factory because she has acquired a necklace, and they haven't. But they say she's no good because of how she acquired it. And this makes a good game, too. But it isn't the necklace that makes Mamie Glutz. An awful lot of people forget this. All right. Puns aside. Well, here we have cause-distance effect. Cause-distance effect. And the game, there's the distance. And when we want to make the game more serious, more complicated, or less workable, want to create more problems, we start throwing in these barriers, such as barrier one up here, barrier two. And we get these barriers working up to masses of energy and forms and things like that. Well, the funny part of it is there's nothing sillier than a barrier when it comes to a solid mass barrier. This is a silly barrier. Because no barrier could possibly restrain a phaeton. We say to somebody, be 3 feet back of your head. I'm reminded of something in connection with this. British auditor who was not himself exteriorized. And he did one of the more remarkable things. He got a hold of a preclear that didn't know anything about Scientology, just a preclear, no instruction at all. And he sat this person down in the chair, and he says to this person, because it was routine at the time to do so, and he said, be 3 feet back of your head. The fellow didn't say anything, so the auditor said, I wonder, let's see now, Ron has said that if we have a little picture, sometimes they have a little picture of where they are on the track or something like that. So he said, well, I'll ask him what he sees. All right. So he says to the preclear, what do you see? And the fellow says, he says, I see a train. And Otter says, so, okay. Now what do you see? Oh, I still see a train. And he said, well, all right. Now he says, look around. What else do you see? You still see a train? And the preclear says, no.
This lecture is continued on side two of this cassette.
So the auditor said, well, that's good. So you cleared up this facsimile. He seemed pretty cute. And he says, now, he says, I want you. The preclear says, oh, wait a minute. Here comes another train. And the auditor said, Ron didn't say anything about repeating facsimiles at all. And so he very, very carefully and quietly, with a horrible suspicion, asked the preclear, where are you? And the preclear said, why, I'm sitting here alongside one of the tracks. He said, here on the railroad station. The auditor says, let's see. And then suddenly remembered that he had also done other things to this preclear, and the preclear had obviously been outside with full ability to experience the entire physical universe and had been sitting there waiting for himself to get run over with a train and had been doing all sorts of interesting things, but had been passing in and out through walls with great ease. It was this thing which, amongst others, mostly struck the auditor as astonishing, as startling, as very fascinating, that the auditor suddenly woke up to the fact that a barrier did not restrain or contain a Thetan unless he really insisted on it. So you see, it's really impossible unless he wills it strongly for an individual to sit over here at this first E on the chart behind the barrier and get out and keep out this individual by reason of a barrier. And he's not able to do it at all unless this individual at E prime here in the first graph has decided to carry around the mass of energy. Because the thing that won't go through energy is energy. Energy won't go through energy easily. It does things to the other energy it's going through. But a life unit can simply go through energy, zip. Means nothing. Any barrier, Fort Knox, walls, the Chateau d'If wouldn't even vaguely restrain anybody who was not packing around energy. So in order to get restrained at all, this individual here has to believe himself to be the energy. He has to say, I am the energy. Mamie Glutz has to say, I am the necklace. See? I am. And the necklace, which I am, cannot pass through this wall. Therefore, I can be contained inside these walls. And therefore, walls are barriers. And if we could just get everybody to grab hold of a bunch of energy and say that he had to hold on to it and that it was precious and that it was valuable, and if we could sell everybody on this utterly, then we could mock up walls which nobody would pass through, and then we could have forts and fortresses and armor and bullets and governments and games of all kinds and descriptions. But there is your entrance point of games right here. All right. If that's the case, and if an individual becomes shy of games, then it's indicated that we have a scarcity of games as well as a scarcity of communication, which we should remedy. You'll discover that after you've processed somebody just so long on straight communication processing as contained in Dianetics 1955, you will discover that this individual is getting a scarcity of games. But the funny part of it is that communication processing doesn't bring about the scarcity of games, which yanking energy away from him does. If you were to make him get rid of every piece of energy he was holding on to, let's say we made him join a monastery. That's a good way to make an individual get rid of everything. You know, throw it all away, give it to the church, endow the bishop with it, live a holy life thereafter. We could make somebody do this. He would have a pretty bad scarcity. His havingness would have been injured. But you can take communication processing, and by running it on a pre-clear, you can do the most fantastic thing you ever heard of. You can start taking energy away from him, making energy actually vanish without influencing his feeling that he has to have. This is a little bit interesting, isn't it? It stands separate from the havingness. But the havingness actually goes to pieces. The masses of energy which he has posted there, these masses right here and here, these masses of energy actually go to pieces, and if you ran communication processing long enough, down here in the second section of this chart, we wouldn't even have a line left. In other words, we'd start to run communication processing. We'd do just this trick and no other trick. We'd have this fellow, this pre-clear, say hello, have a spot out here in front of him, say hello, then have the pre-clear say hello, and the spot say hello, and the pre-clear say hello, and the spot say hello. See, and we'd do that, bang, 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 bang. Up to this time, this fellow had a sensation that he had a sort of a mask on. He had energy masses around his face. He had energy around his eyes. Various weird things like this, you see. And we've run this for a while, and he would tell us that he feels these energy masses moving. But with any other process, it would be necessary for you to have him mock up energy masses and pull them in order to remedy this havingness which he was losing. He would get sick at his stomach. He'd get real sick at his stomach if you didn't remedy his happiness, which is one of the basic and elementary steps of Scientology and Dianetics today. But we could do this. Have him say hello and something out there say hello, and him say hello and something out there say hello, and him say hello and something out there say hello. Back and forth, bang, 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 bang. And this area up here, which we've labeled Area 1, would become this area at the bottom of this chart 7. Now, what do you think of that? You've still given him a game. The game is communication. So therefore, he doesn't too seriously object to losing all these masses, which we had up here as Barrier 1 and Barrier 2. Let's give this a more simple look, a much more simple look, and we will find ourselves comprehending it perhaps a lot better. Let's make here on chart 8... Let's make here a nice big barrier. And let's put Bill on this side of it and Joe over here. And let's have Bill start saying hello and Joe here start saying hello as an answer and reply and as an originated communication. And we have these two fellows say, hello, 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 hello. You know, one says hello, the other says hello, one says hello, the other fellow says hello. And we will eventually get this. When I say eventually, we get this, but it's very simple. We get Bill and we get Joe. And we don't have anything between them. See, here in this second section. Given enough communication, an individual recognizes with great clarity that he is not dependent upon his ridges, his barriers, masses, or individualities or eccentricities. Because communication itself is a game. Fantastic. What I'm showing you here actually works in processing. It's not just a demonstration process. I mean, this would occur. Actually would occur.
Now, we've already covered the fact that when we remedy C, A and R also remedy. That interesting? A and R also remedy. These various eccentricities remedy. Well, look, I hear. I want to show you something. Before anybody gets scared over this situation too badly. Chart 9. This chart will go in reverse. Let's start down here at the bottom. And we have here Homo sap. There we have the ARC triangle. Now, they're really there. I really wrote them there. They're microscopic. That's almost set. Remember that a person's understanding is as good as that triangle is big. So this fellow walks down the street and he sees that an electric light is out. And he says, if he's in pretty good shape, he says, look, there's an electric light out. His understanding of the situation is good. Now somebody else, not quite so good, who's got a pretty good communication lag, also has a reason lag. And they say, I wonder why that light is out. What do you suppose we, let me see. Deep significances. You understand? And somebody had a motive of some kind or another in turning out that light. That's probably, you know, you suppose that the police department has gone into collusion with the criminal element in order to... In other words, his understanding is poor. Understanding of the situation is real poor, this electric light. And now let's get some fellow that's completely spun in. And he comes around and he says, let's see. He just dimly senses there must be something wrong in the environment, but he doesn't know why. And one step below that, he's dead. Now, there's his understanding. His ARC comprises his understanding. Let's look at that real clearly. ARC comprises understanding. The fact of the matter is that you can work out all mathematics just on the basis of ARC, the interrelationship of symbols, factors, figures, relationships, quantities, qualities, and so forth, can all be worked out of ARC. We just take this triangle and we get the relative affinity of this commodity to that commodity. We get the agreement or of this commodity or that commodity, you know, whether or not they have a likeness for each other. And we get in the equation itself a communication. But as we look over mathematics, we can actually evolve these. I'm very, very sorry that in 1950, when I first ran across that, it was in September, I think, that I had a paper, the notes of a paper on this demonstrated the conversion of the ARC triangle into logic or mathematics. I didn't finish the paper. There was a lot of wild things going on one kind or another, and I had to give them too much attention. I didn't finish this paper. And when I didn't finish that paper, by the way, I turned my back on organizations, the first and foremost thing that had to be attended to. Because right now, I would love to have that paper. I could work it all out again, but it was quite lengthy. It was quite conclusive that if you don't have these three things present in a mathematical equation, if you haven't measured them to some degree, the reality of the equation is very poor. Whatever is missing in the equation, it would be missing out of the ARC triangle. Reason itself derives from ARC. But the test of the matter, of course, is understanding. In a preclear. Does a preclear's understanding come up as his communication lag goes out? You said it. As his communication lag goes out, does his acceptability to and his acceptance of the environment go up? You said it. And does his affinity for life and those around him increase? You said it. But more important, does he measure up differently on intelligence? You said it. So here we find this man down here who's being an individual. He is a rugged individual. He's straight out of Dickens. He is an eccentricity compounded with a couple of more eccentricities. We find that as he goes along, his understanding of the life, his life around him is real bad. It's real poor. He just doesn't grasp things easily. We've got to speed up. We've got to increase his ability to communicate before we start increasing his ability in the fields of affinity and in reality, and more importantly, understanding. We've got to speed up his communication. We do all this simply by speeding up his communication and furnishing enough communication in there to be speeded up. All right. We start way down here in state one. Right? Now let's go upstairs, and after we've run communication processing for a short time, we get state two. All right, now after we've run communication processing, let's be real elementary, after we've run the exact process which I told you about there, you know, we just put a couple of guys together and say hello to each other. This can be done on a pre-clear and done very effectively by having him mark up a hello out here in front of him, something live out in front of him, saying hello to him, and then where he is, saying hello to it. And then it says hello to him, and he says hello to it, and it says hello to him, and he says hello to it, back and forth, bang, 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 bang. This is the process, the one I'm giving you right this minute, that this was tested on. This was tested with IQ tests, intelligence quotients, everything else you could think of, every kind of a monitor could be, and particularly skill with mechanical objects. Speed in taking apart puzzles. There was a lot of little incidental psychometry run. You know, you got a half a dozen Chinese puzzles and see how fast the guy could take one apart. Well, a pre-clear this was being worked on, looked at and said, the first time he saw one of these puzzles, he said, "What is that?" It was explained to him, "It's a puzzle." "Yeah, well, what kind of a puzzle?" "Well, it's a Chinese puzzle." "Well, what are you supposed to do with it?" And this was all being clocked on the amount of time it was supposed to, he was being measured on how long it would take him, see, to work this puzzle. Up to a point, and we're getting to that point now, where he was handling them rather well. So, we'd work it a while longer, and we would get this triangle, see? And four here, we would start to get this triangle. And then five, we're off the paper. And at this state five, this pre-clear, who had now exteriorized on this same process, just one shot, see? He exteriorized in this process, and we gave him the last puzzle, which was really, if anything, a little more difficult than anything else, or I gave it to him. And I said, "Well, okay." And he said, "What are you giving me that thing for?" He said, "How do you do it? Punch the center of it and it falls apart." In other words, the understanding of the individual had increased. His ability had increased. His ability to reach and withdraw and to do everything else. By doing what? By having a spot out in front of his face say hello to him. And by him saying hello to the spot out in front of his face. Hour in, hour out, where the only other thing being interposed was find the floor or take a break. Curious, huh? Now, I conducted that experiment myself for this good and excellent reason, that there might have been a temptation on the part of somebody else to have gone off onto Route 1 or to have done something else, or to have just enough broken communication with the pre-clear to have damped it. It wasn't that I didn't trust anybody else. I merely wanted myself an intimate look at this thing evolving. And so we had the phenomenon of the expanding triangle. And this is the phenomenon of the expanding triangle, and you can watch that phenomenon increase. You can watch that triangle increase. You can watch understanding come up, and you can see incidents of accident and other things falling down, and you can see reaction time increasing. Now, we're certainly not paying any attention to memory, are we? Well, I ask you, are we paying any attention to memory?
No.
Well, then the clue of psychotherapy was not memory. The basic undoing of psychotherapy was not memory, and therapies solely based upon memory and the functions and systems of recall are therapies which depend upon the automaticity of memory machines. Because when I got this boy to this final top step after about 28 hours of processing, something like that, his face started to fall apart, so we had to do it behind his back for the last few hours of processing. I would have ruined him. He would have disappeared right in my parlor. This fifth state up here, this fifth state produced this kind of a response on memory. Where were you on July the 17th, 1947? Oh, he says, I was in the living room. What were you doing? I was reading page 27 of a book called Gone with the Wind. You were reading it awfully late, weren't you? Yes. I waited until the servants had stopped talking about it. Pang, pang, pang. Now, these cases, as we will have here in chart 10, these cases that you're looking at with a communication lag are fabulously interesting cases. They're fabulous. Let's go on upstairs again on the same graph system as we had before. One, where you had your little A-O-C. All right, we ask this boy a question. We say, how many chairs are there in this room? This boy does not start to count these chairs. This boy begins to wonder why you want to know how many chairs there are in this room. Now, that's a fairly average response. That is not, by the way, a high-tone response. It's just the average response that you would get. If somebody walked in that door this moment, I asked him, how many chairs are there in this room? This guy would enter into communications. Why did I want to know how many chairs are in this room? Couldn't I count myself? He was not part of this particular Congress. You know, yap, 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 but no communication. So we take state one here, and let's take a look at this person's bank, and let's find that he has C, E, 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 C, 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 C. Then out here with no C leading to it, E, E, and then C, E, 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 C, E. And that adds up to no C. And the actual behavior of a communication lag is something like this. We enter into the first C, and through all of those CEs I trace, this lag tries to go. See? And comes out here. What wall? And when this man looks at anything, he looks at a bundle, and he says, there's nothing there. Yet something looked at the wall and then got lost in this morass here under one. This got lost. And those are the masses that start to fall apart when you say, have the pre-clear say, hello, and then have him have a spot in front of his face say hello to him, and then he says hello, and so forth. What happens here? This thing starts to fall apart. And with a slightly expanded triangle here, we get the communication line of hello, hello, at least only going through a minor amount of ball up here. See? All these old C's and E's are dropping out because we put enough C's and E's in there to resolve this thing here, and we get up here to, well, let's just skip to 5. Where do you think that line has to travel for the individual to know anything, huh? Yeah, what line? He knows there's a wall there without looking. Doesn't have to look to find out there's a wall there. Yes, pretty certainly there's a wall there, but if he wants to look at it, he can also look at it. If he wants to run into it, he'd have to do something else and say, now I'm going to run into it, and so run into it. But when you ask him a question, how many chairs are there in this room? He would tell you the exact number. Bang. And now it might suit his game to find out why you wanted to know that number of chairs in the room. But there is what happens under these processes. This ball, this mask, sometimes somebody feels like he's wearing a mask all over the front of his face. And you say, give me some things you're not trying to create at this moment. That being a stickier sort of a straight wire question. Stickier sort of a question. He's supposed to point these things out and he go, gong, and he will dope off and so forth. He gets right into the middle of that number one ball. And what do you think it contains? What do you think's at all those C and E lines and so forth? What are these masses and so forth that are preventing other masses from occurring? Facsimiles, engrams. And, of course, he goes into restimulation on those lines. And he becomes a very interesting piece of dope-off, he does. But that's his life, dope-off. Now, as he gets on up to state 5, you'd say, well, this individual then would care less about existence. Oh, no, he can feel sympathetic quicker and get over sympathy faster than anybody you've ever seen. But you'd say this individual is not persistent. This individual has no great integrity. No, he has something better than that. He has ethics and honesty. When we get into the problems of communication, we can find 100 billion catalogable phenomena. And we can put these phenomena under the most interesting microscope. We can make ourselves some of the most fascinating combinations and puzzles you ever saw in your life. And we do that simply to have a game, to have something to shoot at. But every once in a while, we get so immersed in hiding the game and in hiding the terminal of the game, we start playing the game, but we don't know it's a game. And we very rapidly and quickly get lost in all directions. And the funny part of it is, a fellow can stay lost. Now, that's the only slightest liability there is to playing the general game called life. A fellow can get lost, he can stay lost. What do you think a tree out here is doing? It was a life form once. But it's still has something vibrating around it. It still is doing something. It still has a game, doesn't it? So it looks like having a game is more important than getting lost. A person will even get lost and go utterly unconscious and unknowing and stupid still to have a game. So along with communication processing, we use the processes which increase the number of games an individual can have. And that process is simply, as I've run on you earlier, invent a game. Have somebody invent a game for you. Have you invent a game for somebody else. And then you say, okay. Well, this, of course, does communication too. And some of the weightier, heavier somatics start to fly off when you run that particular process. But here we find whatever we want to know in life revealed simply by running these communication processes from the standpoint that life is a game, and getting the individual to remedy his havingness of games. That is to say, make him realize that he can invent so many games that he doesn't have to hold on to these old games. And if he realizes that, then he'll let go of some of these things, and he becomes far, far more able. Thank you.